Ever feel like there's a better way to build? So do we. I'm Matt, and welcome to the Mindful Builder podcast, where we believe in education through storytelling. Join me and my co-host Hamish as we both have a passion for building better, breaking barriers, and sharing our experience within the building industry. We're not pretending to know it all. In fact, we're learning right alongside you. Join us each week as we tackle complex topics like building science and mental well-being, inviting the brightest minds to connect curiosity with expertise. We want this to be a real conversation, encouraging vulnerability through honest discussions. So if you love this podcast and you're ready to join in, learn and build better, please do us a favor and subscribe wherever listening. It's the best way to make sure you never miss an episode, plus it really helps us out. And if you're feeling extra generous, a 5-star rating and a quick review would be amazing. Your support helps us reach new listeners and even better, allows us to book incredible guests for the future episodes. Thank you so much for being part of our community. We truly appreciate you. And now on to this week's episode. So the queen of passive house.
I formally agreed not to use that phrase. But
we're all with Claire Parry. In 2011, you started the Passive House Association.
That's when the earliest iterations of it started, and it was just three professionals having coffee just with this idea in mind. I just found Passive House through my work.
As an engineer,
sustainability engineer. It wasn't even a project I was working on. It was a project some other people in my office were working on, and I got so intrigued that I went off to New Zealand on annual leave and did the course on my own cost.
So New Zealand were already doing it?
Yeah, Cara Rosemeyer over there. She was doing the training at that point. But yeah, I didn't even tell my boss. I was just like, I followed my nose into Passive House. And when I got back, I don't even know how I did it. I must have put myself on the designer's register on LinkedIn or something. And David Power, who's a name that's actually left, I think he's back in Ireland now. He's an Irish guy. He was working at Sustainability Victoria at the time. I reached out, and there was a German guy, so it sounds like the start of a great joke, but Christoph Begert, who I think now works at Schneider. So they're both, out of the passive house industry now, but, what we created is pretty cool, which is just this...
monster?
Kind of a monster, but just a community.
Yeah. So your first, when you probably discussed, like, the first time you ever went to someone about, like, oh, I'm looking at this passive house thing, was it like... what tinfoil hat are you wearing, or like, what are you talking about?
Because 2011, in construction terms in Australia, is a long fucking time ago. Like, I feel like we haven't come that far forward, but we've come a reasonable way forward. But 2011, like, I remember what I was building back in 2011. And it wasn't.
I didn't even know what day it was.
Anywhere near what we consider as a good building now.
Yeah, it's definitely very, very fringe, but. My first couple of clients found me. Like, I wasn't doing any spruiking. I think I might have done the odd presentation at an architect's office.
They're European. That'd have to be like,
yeah,
German.
Yeah, there's a lot of expats who come over here and go, what the fuck are we living in? Like, that's generally where the first few projects came from, for sure.
And so the Australian Passive House Association, you founded, started in 2011. When was the first certified building in Australia?
It actually wasn't that long after that. So Dale Roberts down in Geelong, who does AFI projects. He was doing his parents' house, and probably similarly, he started with a willing client, which was his mum and dad, and said, I'm going to have a crack at this. Mm-hmm. And we got that certified.
And he beat Justin by like a week, didn't he, for his house down in Tassie or something? Wasn't Justin saying on the podcast that he just got pipped at the post?
No, it's Harley.
Oh, yeah. Harley was definitely doing some stuff in Canberra at the time. Yep.
Yeah.
So your first PHPP that you would have done, like, there would have been very little help to, like, hey, what do you do here?
Oh, there's a steep learning curve. Yeah.
I definitely bought my first passive house.
Yep.
It would have cost me. In fact, I know that we, Kat and Chris, if you're listening, we broke even.
Yep.
Broke even on that job. But it was to get a certified building.
You probably also did it as a learning curve. Like, it's an investment into where you are now.
And we're also building, like, in at the very beginning of COVID as well.
Oh, okay.
And like throw a dart at figure out where the construction prices were going to end. We're going to end up. Okay, so 2011. So back then, how many members were there?
Oh, a handful.
So would have this been the conference? Just the three of us having
you, Cameron.
I can't remember when the first conference is. I reckon it would have been 2014, maybe about then. By then, we'd built up like a really cool community. It was it was wonderful. Everyone was willing to just, you know, roll up their sleeves and get some stuff done. And I organised that first conference myself. I just remember, you know.
What?
Yeah, I just like, I was ringing, people were like, oh, we need an extension cord. And I was like, all right, I'll go and get an extension cord. And I had to go to, you know, Mitre 10 or something. Or we need backdrops for our display booths. And I was like, all right, where do we get those from? And I was figuring all this out.
You're like, why did I do this?
No, I loved it. I reckon I could probably do anything now having done that sort of stuff. But the community was just... you know, people pulled me aside at the recent conference and said, remember that one we did? And I didn't realise they knew at the time I was doing it by myself, but they knew. But, you know, they were just so happy to be there.
The community's pretty cool. Like, we don't talk without this community.
You drink
the Kool-Aid and it's like off you go.
You do.
Yeah, and it's pretty strong Kool-Aid.
Because, I mean, you were at this year's conference, like we're, what, 10, however many years on, 12, 13, 14? Years on now, like you're pretty proud of where it's at?
Yeah, yes and no. Like I absolutely, the community's awesome. You know, these are some great humans who have just gone, what we're doing needs to get better. But at the same time, I'm just like, where the bloody hell are these buildings? Like why is this not, why has everyone not realised that this is the
kind of flows onto a question.
I was actually a little bit worried
about where that was going just then.
I'm like, oh shit.
But I get that because I mean,
should have been 2,000 people there, you know, like, but
why
isn't it in the code? Why is everyone
now, you know, in 2025 people know what Passive House is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Like that, you know, like even if you don't want to build a passive house, you know it exists.
But 14 years on, like I'm with Claire here, like 14 years on, like why isn't there more?
I'm impatient.
But this, my question here is like, do you think it's actually growing? Because I think it, whilst it's growing in a bubble, it's not growing further to more. Like as a percentage of houses that are built, it's still such a tiny, tiny, tiny percent. Like to me, it's like, why aren't we? Because it all makes sense.
I remember when I found Passive House and I was just sort of looking around going, does everyone know about this? Like, is this, I just found this and nobody else.
Am I stupid that this all makes sense and it's like, oh, this is how you should build a building? Like, why am I the odd one here?
Yeah, my disappointment. And I know the world's a complex place and there's so many problems we need to solve all at once to make this fly. But it's just so goddamn logical. It's so rational. It's such a rational response to a good building.
Yep.
And it's so simple. I think the people that go Passive House is really hard kind of don't get it. I know that it's not the easiest thing to do, particularly where you've got our BAU sitting. Like it's not hard to go from there. Sorry, it's not always easy to go from there to Passive House. But once you know the absolute answer is, you know, a good building has these minimum characteristics, it's really hard to justify not doing it.
So let's actually justify not doing it.
Yeah.
Like why? Like I want to actually throw in the opposite. Like because you obviously know Passive House very well. Like why wouldn't you do it?
There's just so much inertia, so much business as usual that just resists it. There's too many reasons and you get a bit fatigued, I guess, trying to fight it. But I don't know. I honestly don't know the real answer.
I went full cold turkey. Like I canned a project because I'm like, I can't build that way anymore.
Yeah.
All projects don't need to go to certification.
Yeah.
But the method is, it covers out, like the pure reason I started is it covers my ass as a builder from mold and condensation and issues in the future.
Yeah.
And it was the first time a sustainability box had been ticked where it's like, we've spoken about this, where it's like, oh yeah, I'm a sustainable builder. I'm like, am I? I'm using timber.
It's very, what I like about it and what drew me in from the beginning, there was no sort of wishy-washiness about it. It was very prescriptive. There was a clear path that you had to follow. There was a recipe you had to follow and then it was checked by someone.
And it was shiny and our brains like shiny.
Well, for me it was very clear. It was a passive house or it wasn't passive house. And these are the things that you had to follow to get there. It's probably going to lead on to my next question. There's a lot of people out there saying they're building high-performance homes. There's a lot of people that are following the passive house principles, right? In your opinion, can you still build a good home if you follow the same steps without it being certified or without it hitting some of the key metrics of Passive House?
All of the metrics exist for specific reasons. So, you know, there's the minimum expectation to avoid cold radiant surfaces, or the minimum threshold to avoid risk of mold, or the, you know, there's these numbers aren't accidental.
Yeah.
So I'd probably say no, but it really, it's a personal preference. If you're happy, if it's good enough for you to live in whatever you want to live in, then it's a personal preference. But I think a high performance building should meet the minimum expectations of being, you know, healthy, well ventilated, good thermal performance, good comfort outcomes, and durable. And those are, you know, the fundamental expectations.
It's not asking much, really, is it? I would say on your comment there, high performance is this loose term. Every building should, if you were to Passive House, it should just meet low energy within that range. And I think the world would be...
This is the kind of space that we operate within with our buildings. Yeah. Like, we try, most of our buildings, try and have it land within that PHI low energy territory at the very least. That's kind of our minimum standard. But we've got a project at the moment which we're working with. Cameron's involved, Cameron Munro's involved, and it's an old Alastair Knox building. Now, it is almost impossible to get that one to even NFIT level of construction, but and still maintain, you know, that Alastair Knox integrity and heritage. But we've got Cameron in to model any risk, and he's come back to us and said, well, I think we're going to need to put some Intella here. I think we need to do this there. So we kind of understand that building intimately, but we also know that it's, I think it's at 45 or 50 kilowatt hours for heating demand. Mm-hmm. So it's outside of even PHI low energy, but I'm kind of comfortable with it because we've gone through these logical steps to try and manage our risk. It's still got an HRV in it. It's a flat roof, so we're doing the ProClimber flat roof system on there, and Cameron's run all the numbers on it. But, yeah, could, in your opinion, can that still be a good building?
I think, yeah, as long as you understand where the compromises are and what you're going to get out of that and where your risks remain. So, yeah.
I was hoping you were going to say no so you could argue.
No, stop.
Yeah.
It's just about having transparency and having your eyes open to what you're not getting when you do things like that. And you've done as much as you can. I think that's got to be celebrated as well.
And look, the reason I brought that specific example up is because we've got how many tens of thousands of buildings in Australia that shouldn't be knocked down.
I think 9 million.
Right. And, you know, what is now the process to make these buildings better? And I know I'm probably going to annoy some people when I say this, following the Passive House principles, but really following them. Like, there is, in my opinion, there's probably a lot more work that's needed from a modelling point of view if we're going to be retrofitting these buildings, because there's more risk involved.
Was it during the week Dylan sent us something that the UK government, and now they had a handout for insulation fixing all these old buildings, and now they've got to go and rectify them all because they're getting literally fungus. It looks like Stranger Things, some of these houses. Yeah. So you're like, it's...
These are problems that have arisen in multiple other countries multiple times, and we do risk going down the path of just repeating those mistakes, and we should leapfrog, you know, we should go, they did it all here and here and here and here and here and here, let's not do that, because you do build in risk when you do things the wrong way.
Yeah, definitely.
So we're the dumbest people of all if we follow it down. Like, it's really the harsh reality.
Oh, insulation, let's add insulation, but without understanding, you know, the hygrothermal response of a building when you just... you know, slapdash pop insulation on it.
From an engineer's point of view, and obviously Passive House designer's point of view, can you just expand on that a little bit? Now, all this makes sense to me and Matt, but can you just expand on that, like how we actually change the physics of the building, and that we're actually potentially, by putting insulation in, which we think is a good thing, can actually make that building unsafe?
Because this is about to become, I think, a law in Victoria where any rental has to be fully insulated. So the landlord is now expected to insulate the walls and roof. So, because this is going to be a problem.
Yeah, it is. So when, I guess, to keep it really simple, when you change the materials, you change the air tightness, you change the way moisture or vapour moves through a building envelope, you move problems around. And so if you have a building that, you know, is pretty leaky, maybe the it's pretty cold, you're in a unfortunate place where you don't have moisture problems but you're freezing cold, and you probably don't have great ventilation, or, you know, maybe it's quite leaky, then if you try to improve one aspect of that, you risk making other aspects worse. So if you insulate, you change the point at you might change the point at which vapor or you get condensation within or on the surface of a wall, depending on which material you use and whether vapor can transfer through
what
it.
What climate.
Gets super complicated, and often without modeling, using some quite sophisticated and detailed software and parameters, you're just not going to know until the problem arises. And I think we can build databases of if this is the situation you're facing, do it this way. And we can get to that point in having the intelligence to say, you know, does yours match this? Yep, here's the safe way to go about it. We have the ability to make changes in our home because it's ours and it's familiar to us. But, you know, building science is hard.
Yeah.
Like I've been doing it for nearly 20 years and I still know that I have to do a lot of work to understand a problem. I can't just look at something necessarily and understand what the answer is going to be.
So and each wall is different. On a different orientation. Different,
facing the different way.
Location. Like and I understand why it could be so hard for someone because you do one. Yeah, you do one project and you're like, oh, I've got all the answers now. It's like, no, it doesn't apply in that situation now. Yep. I think going back though, when we say about like, should every house sort of be a passive house? I think blank rule, if you're building brand new, it should be. Like it's easy. Like it's
this was actually going to what I'd be circling back to, right? Like because I think that the easiest path forward is just to build certified buildings because then it's we know what the outcome's going to be.
A passive house is easy on a new build. If you can't do it, I think you're doing something fundamentally wrong personally. Like you're either not following the correct process, you're not holding your trades accountable, you're not putting the right team around you. It's at its basic core, I feel like it's very easy. When you hit renovations, it's...
I think that's probably the next problem that it'd be great to kind of get like a big thought group happening because like I don't think we should just be knocking homes over and rebuilding them. Like we've got some great, beautiful architecture out there where heritage needs to be maintained, but we also need to provide a healthy, comfortable environment for people to live in too. So, and in some situations, passive house is probably almost impossible. Most likely from a cost point of view. You can keep throwing money at a problem to solve it, but not everyone's got
that doesn't solve the sustainability issue. Exactly. You just keep throwing product at it. Is that sustainable too?
Well, I guess that's another part of it. But, like, not everybody's got endless dollars that they can spend on something. So
like one of those money trees.
And this is more hypothetical. I'm not asking you to try and solve it now, but, like, I think...
No, you've got to solve it right now.
I think it's something that we know passive house works. We know it works, right? And you can design for passive house from the beginning, but when we've got into existing structures, how can we put like a roadmap or a recipe in front of people to be upgrading these homes in a safe way?
I actually think almost all of the intelligence we need has already been created. Yeah, like there are enough projects out there that have gone through Enerfit and been retrofitted to, resolve these issues. That first project I mentioned with Dale Roberts down in Geelong, that was an Enerfit. Wow. So that was my first project, which I didn't realise the significance at the time, was actually a retrofit project.
You don't mind jumping into the deep end, do you?
We'll just finish the podcast now. So
I was green at that phase.
It's like you're young, you're excited.
But you know what? Naivety is the best thing for innovation, right?
Apple wouldn't exist if I wasn't naive.
You're just like, I can do that. And then you're like, fuck, that was hard.
But it's hard because you look back and go, that was hard. But you go, oh, that was easy too at the same time. Like you're like, oh.
Yeah.
It makes the next thing easier.
Yeah, but then you go like, it's a case of then you realise you don't know what you don't know, so does it become harder? The first one, I felt my first passive house is by far the easiest passive house I built because I was like, oh, cool, we're doing it. Then the next one, like, oh, but I know that doesn't work. And then you start to like...
Should I be optimised?
Yeah. How about this and that? Yeah. And then you're worrying about these details. Like, does that even matter?
Well, I mean, you said it before. Yeah, your worst project's your last.
Yeah, I say it all the time. Yeah. I tell my clients, like, my worst project will be your project. Like, because I should learn along the way.
Like good message for your new clients.
If
you just switch your entire marketing to that whole like piece, Matt, my last project was my worst.
Yeah, but like the thing is, like,
do you want to be the next worst project?
Yeah, but their project, the outcome was based on making mistakes on other people's projects. So I hope I make mistakes on their projects, so then the next project learns from them.
And I mean, let's just be clear that the mistakes that you're, like I'm going to say inverted commas, mistakes that you're making are small mistakes.
But I learn off your mistakes. I learn off our builders group chat's mistakes. Yeah. Like that's how.
But when we say mistakes, maybe mistakes can be kind of small learning and not astronomically detrimental to the home that you've built.
But yeah, and sorry, just to circle back on that last point, I think all the intelligence we need exists. It's probably not well collated. But one of the great things I love about the Passive House community in particular, and this is a global thing, and I've experienced it across my whole career, is that everyone shares almost everything you need. Somebody's got something and they'll send it
sharing,
to you immediately.
But not the great at marketing and communicating. I reckon Passive House is the worst marketed thing. People going around. It's so simple, and I just don't understand why it hasn't been marketed correctly at any aspect from association level, even through to my own business. The messaging is not working.
Yeah, so that's kind of my key point is that none of the technical questions are the thing that is our problem. It's the sales pitch.
My client doesn't care if I've got 11 kilowatts of heating demand. They don't give a shit.
You know what? Maybe they do though.
So, okay, one or two clients are like, what are the numbers? They want to know. But the thing is that's why I don't talk about Passive House to clients anymore. It's health, durability, energy efficiency. Let's talk about them. They care about comfort and health and the aspects. It's just not thermal that people have this misconception that running the heater inside is thermal comfort. But
you're also, I would argue, potentially an outlier because you're getting almost 100% of your projects modeled. So you can tick all these and talk about all these things, but you've still got the benefit of the modeling data.
Yeah, but it's also that, let's just go back to the basics of what Claire said originally. It's durability, it's comfort, it's health. Talk about that. Clients care about that stuff. They don't care about this. I don't know, the PR and these other random things get put into the PHP.
Neither should they. And I mean, they don't really care about, the standard with which you installed that waterproofing in the laundry.
They don't ask the engineer about their breakdown of their calculations to see which beam worked and which one didn't. So why do we need to know about the PHP piece?
It should be assumed,
And I think, I just think it needs to go back to it's almost needs to be taught at for architects and an architectural degree, there's got to be some form of Passive House a whole unit on that. Same as engineers, construction degrees, even apprenticeships, through every apprenticeship from bricklayer to plumber to electrician. There's got to be some form of education so people are aware, because we're just not doing anyone justice if we don't, because they're going to just fall behind. Because this will grow, maybe not the pace we would like, but it will eventually become, building science will be forced to become something. Mm.
Yeah, I feel like people are much more educated now and they're demanding it more.
There's so much free information through social media now. Yeah.
Claire, so you are an engineer. So what are you doing now? So you're not involved in the association anymore? You're not?
No.
I'm assuming you're a member?
Yep. Just, I was clever. I wrote myself in as a lifetime member. but recently had my organization join. So we're now a corporate member as well.
Yeah, cool. So what are you doing now?
I am a sustainability director at a government agency. So Passive House for me, when I came across it, I was a generalist at the time. Water, materials, I can't think of anything else, energy efficiency.
Yeah.
All of generalist sustainability in development projects. And Passive House, I went down one hell of a rabbit warren for a while there, and I've come back out to become a bit more of a generalist.
Yep.
So, driving sustainable outcomes and a couple of Passive House outcomes on government projects, which is awesome. Can't reveal them yet, but they'll come out pretty soon, I think.
Unreal.
And I do a bit of certification in my spare time.
So you're still doing
because
this is one of my questions that I had here is you've obviously gone from you start your association that you also have your own business, so you kind of, as business owners, you kind of do what you want to do when you want to do them, but now you go work for government, and now I'm assuming that there's layers of the people you got to go through and you can't just do what you want. How do you find that and navigate that, because it would be very hard to
I literally just wrote government friction, how hard the sell.
Because you're just probably the fucking answer is here. I'm telling you, this is the... Yep. And then it's just we got to investigate that or study that. And
Well, the agency I work for is kind of in a nice position halfway between government and industry. So we're a developer. We're the state government's developer. And so we're not as hamstrung as, say, a department would be. And I know that's probably a nuance most people don't appreciate. But we have our own strategy and we approach our projects with ambition. And my mantra is just do the work. Like if we're going to build something and we can strategize about what that project should do and should be, and if Passive House is on the table, then do the work to test why we wouldn't do it, basically. And that's how we've got a couple of projects up.
So is now like, because is now that you've done, say, the Passive House stuff, are you like bored, like let's do the Living Building Challenge?
For sure.
Because it's like, oh, yeah. I've done that, boring.
I'm on the technical working group for the Living Building Challenge.
Yeah, because that's like, but I feel like I started doing the course. I actually stopped doing it because I felt like it was too Americanized.
Well, that's our job, is to Australianize it.
Yeah, because like they're talking about solar and I'm like, we already do this. So I actually quit the course from the American side of things. I felt it was just like, I didn't feel like it was relevant almost a lot of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they are very nice compliments. I mean, with any rating tool, I haven't come across one yet that's terrible.
That hurts.
I forgot about that one. That's building code. That's not really a rating. They're sort of more outcomes driven. So the Living Building Challenge, the whole ethos is around, you know, making projects do good as opposed to less bad.
Yeah.
In what way? So, you know, a project should remove any toxicity from materials rather than just reduce it. It should be self-sufficient with energy and water on site. And there's some fantastic and super inspirational projects that have been achieved. There aren't a lot. Like, this is not easy.
It's more a commercial thing. Like, residential is probably a lot harder.
A few resi around.
But even like the say, for example, the sewage component and the water use, like that's...
Yeah. It's within stuff that makes sense, you know. Yeah. Like you're not going to have every house having a little on-site sewage system isn't rational. So there is something called scale jumping in there. So, but the Passive House is a great complement to Living Building Challenge because if you want to achieve the Living Building Challenge outcomes, Passive House is your most rational way to achieve that. So you reduce your demand and you improve your indoor environment quality and you're, you know, 95% of the way there on those relevant aspects.
Because I wanted to do it for my house and I started to do the materialist and I can't be bothered.
I started doing it at my house, yeah. So Proclaimer products, so Declare label. What else?
The Ortex, polyester insulation. There's a pretty good list. I think I've got about 8 Declare labelled products in my house.
Yes.
Went outside.
Got biophilic carpet as well.
Yeah,
and the paints.
There's a number that I've used that definitely would be easily passed if they like just lime paint, which is lime and water.
Yeah. It's really the Declare label, which is in the Living Futures sort of family of rating schemes, is one that I'd encourage everyone to look at. It's how do you remove toxicity from materials.
So really just to give people an idea, and this is my understanding of the Declare label, it's you go to supermarket and you pick up a piece of like a packet of chips and you look at the ingredients list and it tells you what's in it. It's the same thing for building products.
Yep. Yeah. And so there's red list free is like the ultimate. Red list is any, you know, chemicals that I guess disrupt your body and natural function. I've probably explained that badly, but so red list free is the best type of Declare label, and Declare just means a manufacturer said, here's all the things in my product, which
there's hundreds there from Australia. You can actually click the Australian tab now. There's hundreds of them.
I was actually going to ask that, because so the Declare label has nothing to do with that like construction movement or the Architects Declare movement or the Builders Declare movement.
No, it actually doesn't know.
But
it's a transparency label, and if you're seeking healthy materials, it's a really fabulous place to go.
I actually live on it all the time because I'm actually looking for rugs at the moment. There's rugs there that are Declare labeled too. With you doing your house, it's just interesting because I know, for example, there's a lot of plumbing fittings and fixtures had lead through the actual fittings. And that's one thing I wanted to remove from my house, but now it's actually become code with the removed lead from light faucets and stuff like that.
I want to just ask you a quick question. So you're obviously in the development arm of the Victorian government. Yeah. Do you ever just like go and do like a sneaky PHPP on sort of projects, even when you haven't been asked to do it? I'd be so tempted to do that.
Like failing.
I haven't recently, but I definitely have done that.
Hey, guys, I'm just going to put this in front of you right
now. But it's also probably hard not to be a conflict of interest too, is it? Like, do you feel that because you're probably so passive house pro, like
at heart? How is that a conflict
of interest? No, but like you kind of like you... No.
I can't certify our project.
Yeah.
You can't be the, you know, examiner and assessor, you know, the sit the test and you know,
yeah.
Mark as well.
Okay. Yeah. Conflict of interest probably isn't the word I was probably should have used. It's more just like
biased.
Yeah. You know, when you're trying to push something, you kind of got to let people figure it out themselves a little bit.
Yes. And
we are really closely involved in our projects. So we are the client on a lot of them. So I'm not shy about going.
We should look at this. You know, this is something that we probably should look at.
It sucks that you have to have that conversation. That shouldn't even be the conversation. It should be just like every job should be just like, yeah, cool, we're doing that. Especially at a government, when we were talking about this before, sorry to cut you off, like education for schools and kindergartens.
Special housing.
And then also aged care centres, like they're the most vulnerable people in society and they're usually the people that can't afford any of it.
I remember when I was first looking at schools for Darcy, my youngest pet, how many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, we're in Warrandyte and there's this old, you know, this sort of a hodgepodge of a school, right? There's these old beautiful buildings and then you've got kind of these demountables which have now become like permanent fixtures.
Yeah. The old portables.
The old portables, yeah. And I walked in there and it was in the middle of winter and I just looked up and there's just condensation on all the windows inside and I'm like, well, I don't know how I feel about this. Like this is, you know... I know this is not being ventilated properly. It's being heated. You know, we've obviously got this condensation potential mold problem, but what are the CO2 levels in
there? So surely there's a study on that.
Well,
someone.
Of course there is. Yeah. And you can't and as I'm saying these words, I'm now wondering why Darcy, who goes to school with a massive smile on his face, comes home and he's a little...
He's like, I've got to hang out with Dad.
Well, there's that, but also, you know, you can't blame him, one, overstimulated and stuff at school, but also he's probably not in an environment which is beneficial to him as a young person with oxygen levels.
So question here, and because I don't have kids at school yet, like COVID, we chucked all these air purifiers in these rooms. They still run them?
I don't know.
Oh, good question.
Because he paid a fortune for it. Like,
yeah, probably not.
Wouldn't that make sense to keep them going?
Yeah. This is no criticism to the school that my son goes to, by the way.
What school was it?
Honestly, it's a great school, but it's you know, it really makes you think, you know, how are we setting our new generation of humans? Setting them up?
There's oodles of research around this and there's parts of Germany where they've mandated passive house and that's the exact reason. And I did a study when I had my own consultancy with Andy Marlowe at Envirotecture and we're fortunate enough to find an advocate in the New South Wales Schools Infrastructure Building Body and they commissioned us to write a report to say, we're about to build this building. And we just really did an academic exercise to say, well, what would it take for this to be passive house? And I think at the same time Andy also did some work to say, there's a huge opportunity if you made it CLT to make, you know, the airtightness easier, to bring the embodied carbon down, stuff like that, because it was a steel frame. So we know the answer. We know what the benefit could be. We did all them bridge modelling. I think we might have even given them some indicative costs. And, you know, we published it online. It's still available if you want to search for it. So
what was the outcome? Did they build it?
No.
What what's the reasoning cost? Or like what's the catch? Or
I think I think sometimes that what's the catch bit is playing in people's mind. They're just like, it can't be this easy. Or, you know, how much does this really matter? And the beauty of that study actually was that that school was being built in one of the most benign climates in Australia. I think it was Port Macquarie. And we still showed that they were going to save something like 80% energy.
Wow.
And it's like,
yeah, it's
this is the best worst case I can give you. Like this one works.
It
absolutely sails through.
And it didn't go through.
Didn't go through, and there's probably lots of reasons why, but the government at the time was spending a lot of money. They'd identified a problem around schools not having cooling, so in summer the kids all suffered and not having – and they were removing gas at the time as well. And I think they'd figured out they needed to have a ventilation program. So the stars were kind of aligning, but this solution probably wasn't – I think sometimes people think they know what the answer is they're looking for.
Yeah.
And it was – take out the gas, put in air conditioning, tell the teachers to open the windows. And so we gave this thing from left field and it probably didn't really.
It wasn't ready.
But the study's there.
Are there schools in Victoria? Is there any school, like, and you might not be able to talk about it, but there are schools that have been passive house certified or attempting to?
There's one that's either just been certified or right on the cusp in Clifton Hill.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's so a three
Clifton,
story.
So they're such a Hill.
Yeah.
So Clifton Hill.
It's a public school.
Yeah, awesome. But like, and there was a, and I think this was a private school in Terry Hills, but there was a presentation in last year's Thrive conference about two or three buildings that were made out of prefabricated, I think from Lara, was it Lara's?
Is that the one in Sydney where they talked about the childcare centre?
No, this was in Terry Hills, and I think it was two or three buildings that was.
Could be, were they CLT? I think I know the one.
Maybe there were CLT. Yeah. Anyway, there's proof of concept. It works.
There's so much proof of concept. So one thing I've recently done is gotten sick of that question around the technical aspect. And I mean, I think I've known this for a long, long time, is it's about the people just choosing what to do or understanding it. It's the social aspect and the cultural shift. And you'd see this yourself. Like, it's a cultural shift you need to make in construction, not technical. Yeah, people have to want to do it and pick up the right products and aspire to the outcome. So I've gone off on doing a grad cert in this, and I'm gonna have a crack of finding, hypothesising about whether I can find the answer or not.
And are you kind of more talking about how you sell it?
No, about shifting behaviour.
Okay.
More fundamental.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because we do need to change the way we talk about it.
Yes.
I've tried 100 different approaches though, and... Yeah.
There's an opportunity for a marketing platform out there for like a social media team or a digital marketing team to come.
I think the point is that there's no one answer as well. Like a lot of people, I actually love how dorky and scientific the Passive House Institute are. If they had better marketing, the whole world would be different though.
But like I'm going to be – Amy, she's going to hate me now. Like I think we've wasted time – this is my own opinion, by the way, not anyone else's. We spend too much time arguing whether it's about HOUSE or HOUS. There's bigger things to worry about.
Yeah, I couldn't care less.
Like, who cares? They're both passive house.
Who gives a fuck?
Seriously, like let's work out how to get these in people's houses and schools and childcare and everything else. Why worry about the spelling? Yeah. That's not selling and making it sexy. It's just pushing people against each other, arguing, taking away from real issues.
Can I also point out, like, this is... If you are new to Passive House, let me just ask, how the fuck are you going to put it into Google? Are you going to write Passive House or are you going to write Passive House? You're going to write Passive House, I guarantee it. So just drop that.
I just heard it.
Drop the whole, like, we're going to spin it, do it this way or that way. That's just dividing, putting a divide in there that is unnecessary.
And you've got, in my opinion. So I'm going to go back again.
So Passive House Institute
is spelled differently to Passive House in Australia. And then the plaques we get that are certified say HOUSE. The certification says HOUSE. And I just think we've wasted so much time and effort around an issue that just
It doesn't matter. But, I mean, honestly, it doesn't matter. Let's claim them both. But exactly. Also...
Yeah.
Claim them both.
They're both just as good as each other.
But when we set up the Passive House Association, the Germans were actually trying to approach the English-speaking world and saying we want to be speaking in English. They chose... They actually told us that we had to spell it in
English.
And we thought, this isn't what we want, but let's just do what we want to do.
And then the money that gets spent having to educate and market people, it's already confusing enough. Now we've got to take...
It's one sentence. I couldn't care less about
it. So I think that's already consumed too much time and that might piss people off, but I really couldn't give a fuck.
I think people need to get over it a bit and just, the opening sentence is house also means house or house means building and just... All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
Is it sausage rolls or hot dogs for lunch? And it's like, it's seriously.
Do you know what? Let's have both. They're both delicious.
Yeah.
We need to do that taco ad, you know, we have both.
Yeah, it's... I just get so frustrated. Because the marketing message is everything. Like that's, and I feel like, you know when
but
you...
But the marketing isn't about how do you spell it. The marketing is about what do you get. Like I think that's where we've fucked up. Like we need to...
I've been chatting with a few people about some marketing stuff, and Jaunt Motors recently. I don't know if you guys know who Jaunt Motors are, right? They've got a really cool, they electrify cars, but old cars like Defenders and Mokes and stuff. And they've got this really amazing series at the moment on their Instagram about how the car feels. So they're not going to try and sell it. Mm. They're actually getting the reactions of people that are driving these old 1950 Defenders.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wow.
They look damn cool. How cool is it?
Yeah, yeah. But how do we capture the same? Because you go, oh, what's it like to live in a passive house? Oh, wow.
I can tell you, like my house is half passive house, half 1910 double brick, freezing cold monstrosity, which is where we sleep, and we live in the other half. And we are trying to move.
You hate going to bed.
We don't want to. we're trying to move house, yeah. and we're just everything we look at, it's like we have to leave this passive house. We don't want to, like,
too
living
small.
In a passive
you
house.
Want to move location or?
I move closer to friends.
Yeah. Okay.
But you know, the reality is living in a passive house is just so damn good. I don't want to live anywhere else.
So this is where I think, you know, when you go, and so we've gone.
There's the marketing right there. So that's it. You've got to sit down people who live in a passive house to sell it.
Yeah, my marketing this week, Claire doesn't want to move house because her house is so comfortable. But going back to, so when Nicole and I were about to move in about 6-7 weeks to our house, we finished, it was not certified yet. It ticks all the boxes. We're going to be certified. Now, when you have someone come into a new industry, like with construction, for example, Nicole's in marketing. Mm-hmm. And she sees how things are done. She's like, why do you do it that way? Why do you do it that way? I think what marketing is going to take is someone from completely external that's not part of construction, passive house or anything like that to start understanding how to talk to people about it, not us trying to talk to someone about it. We need to be told what to say. Does that make sense? Like we need someone that's going to come in with a complaint. Like I don't even need to know what passive house is. What does it do?
If you think about, like, as I said before, a house is a machine. You know, if you think about your car, if you were driving along, and my brother used to have a WB Ute, and it was horrendous because I'd be sitting next to him and we couldn't talk to each other because it was so damn loud in there that you'd be driving along and you just silence and then you get wherever you're going and you start talking again. New cars are much more insulated, they're quieter, they're more comfortable.
They're optimized.
You don't go in to buy a car and say, can I speak to the guy in the factory who built this? Like,
Elon's not picking up the phone being like, oh, Matt, like, I've got this feature that's coming.
Or even, you know, the guy in the assembly line who put the insulation in the roof and glued the finish on. But you speak to the salesperson who says, here's what you're going to get. You know, you buy a car in a completely different way, and it's a machine. And people, I think, underestimate how much of a machine a house is. We think of it as this dumb box with windows and doors. But a finely crafted house is so great.
But we also this is a hard thing about housing as well. It's like people go spend a fortune on car, understanding it's a depreciating asset.
But
people are too worried to spend a little bit more on the thing they spend 90% of their time in to make it comfortable. It makes no. Yeah.
Well, and people make decisions when they build a house that are bizarre. Like they'll buy, and I realize, you know, things that are beautiful, you're willing to spend money on. But my favorite part of my house is my ventilation system. Like, you know, people come around and they're like, oh, it's this beautiful timber and
come
and
look
bench.
At this.
And I'm like, no, come over here.
Come look at all the bugs caught in my filter.
Yeah, my 6-monthly picture on Instagram of like changing the filters. Look at this. Yeah.
I still remember the one that Burkhard did when it was the bushfire season, and he showed it like the filter of the, and I'd just done the course, and I was like, why the fuck? Like, how is this just not blowing up?
Mm. Yep.
Like I have, and this is super selfish. I have, because there will be another bushfire, mm-hmm. and I'll be in my house by then. And I've got some things in my head to like. Because it's like the topic that you've got to talk about when no one wants to talk about it.
I hope you're not waiting for a bushfire match.
No, I know, I'm not.
But
he's
going to be in the window going, ha, ha.
Yeah, but that's what you have to do. Because you've got to.
He's going to be on social media going, ha, ha.
Yeah, but you've got to talk about it when it's most uncomfortable to everyone else.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's when it starts conversation and we live in a negative hook at the moment in social media, and that's the world we live in with marketing and digital, that the only reason you sit and watch on your phone, you got 3 seconds to go, am I going to watch this? And it's only the ones you go, oh, what have they done wrong? So you've got to spin it the opposite way to grab the short attention span of people.
So 2011, AFA was started.
We've gone off track.
We're now at 2025.
Yeah.
Now, I think I reckon I've been in the space since 2018, 2019, and I'm pretty excited about how much it's accelerated in the last couple of years. I know, you know, there was a bit of a lag from when you sort of started, but I really feel like right now, just the people that are coming to us know about it now. 2 years ago, I had to convince them. Now they're coming to me for a solution.
Question.
The trades that are working for us or new people, like my DMs are full of, oh, have you got any work? We'd really love to get on some of your sites.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't happening 2 years ago, but it's happening now. So I feel, I'm hoping, you know, my glass half full brain is like we're on this precipice of, you know, like actually, regardless of whether there's code freezes or not, that the consumers are going to demand these new buildings or these better buildings.
Just a minimum standard. People can go, I want more.
I think if you asked me before if I'm proud of where the industry's at, I'm pretty fucking proud that you guys can just focus your business on Passive House. That's so cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And let's just point out that you, if it wasn't for you, that probably wouldn't have been the case.
I do remember like the hardest thing even when I had clients in say 2015, the hardest thing was we'd go through design, they'd say, do you know any builders? I'm like, shit, like who's going to build this thing? And there were some willing builders Devin. Out there, but my God, that was hard to find a builder. Mm. And yeah, you'd go to like Devon's site and it was beautiful, you know, it was a thing of beauty. Like every piece of tape was perfectly pushed down and perfectly straight.
But
like
now it was wonderful. Yeah, but you said to a carpenter 10 years ago, like I remember when I was an apprentice and I'll be open here, you'd put the sarking on the wall. You couldn't give two fucks about how it went on. You'd just be like, whack that in. If it's got to rip it, move on. Now,
if it had tape on it.
No, you didn't tape it.
There was no tape on it.
I didn't know what tape was, but now every single tradie, that's all they want to showcase on social media. Look how nice and neatly I wrapped a house, which is awesome.
I think if you can be proud of your work in that way, that's pretty cool. And if people are coming to you looking for work, so the young carpenter who built my house, he's a guy named Geordie McCallum, and he's not located in Victoria anymore, but oh my, it's crafted to perfection and it's so beautiful.
But just care.
He just really, really wanted to do a passive house, and he was ringing the architect all the time saying, yeah, have you got any work? So one thing I will say is I think it's so great that you guys just share your stories, because I think we're crowding out the shit. Like we're sort of just crowding out the bad stuff. And if people just come across it, like that's the first hurdle we've got to get across. People just finding these stories.
There are some battles. There's people who still...
There always will be.
Yeah.
Should we name names?
And I think you just got to ignore that.
There's always going to be a naysayer. There's always like it, but that's healthy because you can have a conversation that someone argues the opposite point. Like that's how we.
That's fine.
It challenges you,
and you've got to know when to just leave those people to their own devices. And you've got to. There's always going to be people who are just in opposition, and they'll probably not change their mind, and they just love being adversarial sometimes, but.
They're entitled to an opinion too, though. Like they can, whether it's right or wrong, we might disagree or agree. Like they
the nature of the world. Yeah. I think. How you, don't, you know, preserve your own bandwidth, I'd say, in those situations,
I definitely, I haven't refrained from, I've tried.
What's next for you? Are you moving?
Moving house, hopefully, yeah.
Stay in Victoria?
Just.
Building again or?
I think, we might rent. I mean, we're moving into summer, so it's probably easy for me to sort of, say let's rent for a little while, and then next winter I'll be bitching about it no end.
There's your story. There's your marketing, though. I think that's like, can you capture that? Like that's your, like
my suffering.
But that's how you've got to capture it. Like we've got to play on emotions.
Yeah, no, we do. But one of the things I love about living in the passive house, I've got a 10-year-old and he's never sick.
I've got an 11-week-year-old.
Jeans are great, but
yeah, I've got an 11-week-year-old, and we're going to move in 6 weeks. So she's going to spend hopefully all but 16 weeks of her life in a passive house or something pretty lucky. Yeah.
We've got 3 kids now, and I know personally I've been battling something cold-wise for the last 8 weeks, and it just keeps coming back. And I'm like, I just wonder if I was in a different home right now. Phoenix wouldn't be sick, Darcy wouldn't have a sniffle, you know, I would have shaken this ages ago because I'm getting cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, hot.
No, but passive house costs more, man. But this is also like, I also have a very strong opinion that it's not
you
just
have a strong opinion.
Yeah, yeah, so it's not just the construction sector of say whatever we're going to talk about. There's also the health sector should be pushing harder for these buildings.
Oh, great.
Because
the Snow House hospitals. Every social housing project we build and every affordable housing project, every house.
So yeah.
Let's start there.
So where I live.
Let's just start with every house and then problem solved.
So where I live, Maranong City Council, I'll call them out here, they have the highest rate of cardiovascular, respiratory and another whatever of rates of diseases in that. Like, and that might be due to multiple reasons and it's very multicultural, but the big one thing is air quality. Where I'm about to live, Yarraville, second highest suburb for worst quality in air quality in Australia. Like, surely the health department are pushing on some level of government, like, we have the answers to reduce our burden on healthcare spend if we do it this way. But yet, like, we've got the two filters of the stacks of this new tunnel. They're refusing to put filters on. So what's now the cost of the healthcare system that has to have that burden when we keep removing healthcare funding, when we've got to be putting towards things like these filters to reduce the burden on the society?
These are rational trains of thought and ones I'm trying to follow as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll talk to you. There's a whole thing that we've got coming out early next year around this and I can't talk about it on air just yet. I'll tell you after and I'll be able to talk about it in about 10 weeks. But it's something that just makes it, you sit there and you're like, who's writing this? Like, the answers are there. The outcome's there. Like, other people have done it, and yet we just make it hard on ourselves, and then we pay a fortune to fix the issue.
Stay positive, people.
I just
can't get better.
The things we should be optimistic about are all the right pieces of passive house are in the code. We insulate, we consider thermal bridges, we're improving glazing, condensation's now in there, ventilation is in there. It's not, the thing they need to do is come together and properly enforced and influence particularly residential design better.
We're almost there. It just like needs a little bit of quick tidy up and we're good.
It's taken a lot of time and a lot of energy to get to this point, but we should take heart that the bits can come together.
And you have a choice though, because that is the minimum standard and you can build better.
Minimum legal allowable product. We should stop focusing on it.
And you wouldn't drive in a car with no steering wheel or seatbelt, so why jump in your house without one?
Yep.
Mindful moment. This is brought to you by MEGT, Australia's Apprenticeship Experts, where both Hamish and I have our apprentices signed up.
Two apprentices.
So four were all up, and they're the people that, funnily enough, I actually did my apprenticeship through too. So pin up, boy. So I actually have this week again, we're going to go on an apprentice topic of a moment that was learned. So on Monday, I get a call from one of my carpentry team on site, and I'll say it's Jack from Freshcon, and Jack does an amazing job. I'll give him a shout out. Now, what actually happened is they had framed the windowsills of this passive house, or targeting passive house certification, that they framed them 30 mil too low, all right? So which meant that some of the lines didn't line up correctly. And we're sitting there, and Jack, myself and one of my team were like, how are we going to fix this? And out the back we hear Cal, he's like, you're going to talk about this on the podcast? And I said, yes. So he actually, fourth year apprentice, said, I have a solution to it. And all he said is like, they were Logic House windows and we put the reveals on, we screwed them and glued them to fit them in so the easy reveal would line up. And he's like, because we had too much packing, I saw it, I was like, that's too much packing under a window, I wasn't happy with it. He's like, why don't we just screw another pine reveal on the bottom so it's pine across the whole way to build it so we can drop it down but it's still the same height. And he solved the problem.
Were you worried about the packing from a thermal bridge?
No, just too much. It was like 45 mil packing. I just didn't want that much under a window. So we could reduce that. And he's like, why don't we just use we're going to rip it out. All the windows we're going to cut down and lower it with more pine. But he's like, we're just putting pine on anyway. Let's just do it to the bottom of the window reveal. And I was like, you've just solved everyone's problem. You saved 2 or 3 days' work of work for Jack and his team, like probably thousands of dollars of cost. But the motto of the story is like, if you're an apprentice or you're someone that's young, don't be afraid to speak up if you've got an idea. And it might not be right all the time. It might be wrong half the time. And it's okay to be wrong, but it might give an idea to someone else. It's a little bit more experience to go, oh, we could play on that and we can prove that. And you kind of feed off each other. So I just want to give Cal actually a huge shout out, because you had three builders on site that were trying to solve the problem, and the fourth year apprentice of the person actually solved
it. Well done, Cal.
So, Claire, thank you very much for coming on. I think from both of us, we're not here where we are without what you've done from a passive house
perspective. Timing is everything. It's
okay. Yeah, yeah, but like you, like we've got it pretty easy. We get to reap the rewards almost. Like where you've had to put in all the hard work to get to where probably the association is today.
I mean, I'm pretty excited because I think we might have a project together, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, pretty poor exciting. You, Claire.
Hey, well.
I just get to say yes or no.
Just make his life so hard. Make his life super hard for me. But thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Claire.